How's everybody doing this morning? And Merry Christmas. This is, as Phil mentioned earlier, this is our last Sunday of the year, the last Sunday of 2020 for us, as we won't be having any broadcast services on the 27th. And it just gets me thinking about this past year. How was your last year? A lot of people are posting on social media how they're just ready for 2020 to end. And I know for a lot of people, 2020 represented a lot of frustration, a lot of pain, maybe even some darkness. And as we were singing the worship songs this morning, it just made me think that that in the midst of the darkness and the frustration that we've experienced in 2020, that the light of the world, Jesus Christ, has wanted to walk with us through that journey. And I pray that you have walked with Jesus in this journey, that he's been there with you. And if he hasn't, the year isn't over yet. You can invite him in. In the new year, starting January 11th, we're going to be starting a brand new Alpha Online course. And Alpha Online, if you've never taken it before, it's a great 11-week course that introduces people to faith, introduces people to the story of Jesus, gets people to ask questions and think about things of that nature. It's a wonderful opportunity for someone who isn't a Christian or someone who is just curious to be able to come alongside and take a very non-threatening course like that. If you haven't thought of somebody yet, I would encourage you to do that. Someone that you can invite, someone that you know, to check out Alpha this January. You can go to our website and find out more information about it. With that being said, I have one video to show you before I speak to you this morning.
We share things every day. Things that are meaningful to us, that entertain, inspire, or challenge us. We share moments, good or bad, big or small, because what we share matters. We have the chance to share something incredible, the hope that has transformed our lives. And today, more than ever, people are searching for hope, for connection, for meaning. The life we've experienced in Jesus is available to our friends and neighbors, and it's easier to share than we might think. Over the next few weeks, we are running Alpha, an opportunity to share Jesus with friends, family, and colleagues in person or online. Each week, we'll connect with each other, watch a short video, and have time to discuss our thoughts and questions without needing to have all the answers. All it takes is a simple invitation. Share life, faith, hope, Jesus. Who will you invite?
So what are you doing this Christmas? How have you been spending your time? Have you been playing a lot of movies, getting let Netflix? I know for a lot of people during the Christmas season, one of the things they do is they get out all the old Christmas movies and start watching them. Some people are really, really nostalgic and they watch the same Christmas movies every single year. Which are the Christmas movies that you watch? When I think of the Christmas story, It's interesting. You know, some movies, some of the movies that actually I'm attracted to or I've watched in the past that appeal to me are movies where it'll show multiple timelines at once. And when you start the movie, you're maybe watching different people and their lives, and at the beginning you're a little bit wondering, how does this all connect? How do they relate to one another? And as the movie progresses, you'll notice how their stories will merge together. And it becomes all these different people who have different stories eventually have one story that is together. And when I think of the Christmas story, I think of just that. When we look at the stories that are talked about in the New Testament, the stories of Jesus' birth specifically, We have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And each one of them takes a different tact when they describe the Christmas story. In fact, each one of them are so different that some critics have looked at the Christmas story, looked at what's written in the Bible, and they've questioned, is it reliable? They've said the way they describe the story, they're all so different that are they making it up? They're saying that maybe it's even contradictory to a certain extent. But when you look at the stories closer, I believe they're not contradictory, but they show different viewpoints of the same story. It starts with Mark. Mark is probably the first one who wrote down the story of Jesus. And when he wrote it down, he jumped right into Jesus' adult life. He talks about John the Baptist and then right away into Jesus' adult ministry. You can imagine the different disciples would have originally read the Gospel of Mark, and Matthew would have been one who has said, Mark, I think you're missing a few things, and I can add something in. And he starts writing about, not just about Jesus' ministry, but goes all the way back to Jesus' genealogy, his ancestry. If you've ever gone to ancestry.com, this is what Matthew would have done. He goes back to ancestry.com and figures out how Jesus connects to the ancient patriarchs, specifically to Abraham and David, and how he's in that genealogical line. Matthew takes the Christmas story and Jesus' birth from the perception of Joseph, which would have been Jesus' earthly father. What would Joseph had experienced? What it would have been like for him? Matthew throws in the story about the Magi or the wise men and how they came searching from afar to find this newborn baby. Matthew's the only one who records that piece as well. Matthew records the escape to Egypt for Jesus and Mary and Joseph, and how Herod was coming to kill Jesus, how they had to escape that night. You can imagine Luke, he maybe came after Matthew, and he's reading Mark, and he's reading Matthew, and he's researching his own stories. He's talking to Mary, the mother of Jesus, and he's like, there's more to this story than what you've recorded. And he starts interviewing Mary, and Mary gives her version of the story. And Luke is really through her lens. And Luke talks about the shepherds who came, which Matthew didn't talk about. He say, hey, Matthew, you missed this part, these shepherds and the angels talking to the shepherds and telling them about this newborn king. So there's a story of Mary, and there's a story of the shepherds, and even there's a story, he starts right at the beginning with the story of John the Baptist, and how he was conceived, and the story behind that, and how that interconnects with the conception and the birth of Jesus. These three were first written, and then John comes along at the very end, and we know through church history that John wrote last. And John's writing of the Christmas story was so different than Matthew and Luke's. Matthew and Luke starts with the physical birth of Jesus, but as John writes his story about Jesus, he says, you know what, this Jesus, he didn't just start at his birth, but he takes a macro view, a cosmic view of the story of Jesus, and he goes right back to the beginning. He goes right back to the creation of the world. And he says, this is where it started. Jesus didn't show up on the scene just as a baby, but Jesus was there at the beginning. And this is how he begins his gospel. He says, in the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He starts off just like in Genesis. And he's referring to Jesus as the Word, that he was there and that he already existed. This word is in Greek is logos, and it had kind of slightly different meanings depending on who you talked to. It was a very common word in the ancient world. And for Jews who believed in Yahweh, this one true God, they believed that the logos referred to God's spoken word. But for those who were not Jewish, who were Greek speaking, who were Gentile, and when they talked about this word logos, they believed that the logos was the power of the universe. And so John is playing on these two different understandings, and he's saying Jesus was the word. He was God's spoken word. He was there at the beginning, and this Jesus was the power of the universe that made everything come into existence. He wasn't just there, but he made it happen. It's interesting, this word logos actually comes from our word logic comes from logos. If you can imagine this, Jesus was the logic at the beginning. He's the one who made sense out of the chaos that we read about in Genesis chapter 1. He made sense of it all and brought it into existence. So Jesus just wasn't a player on the scene, but he was the power on the scene. John's Christmas story didn't start at Jesus' physical birth, but it started at creation. And if I continue in verse 4 of chapter 1, it says this, "The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it." I love that. This word referring to Jesus, another way that they describe Jesus or John describes him is he is light. He is a light that brings life to everyone and everything. This light is so bright that it shines in the darkness and it can never be extinguished. Can never be extinguished. Most lights that we encounter that we deal with on a regular daily basis can be extinguished. They can be turned out. You can flip the switch or blow out the candle or whatever it is and it's extinguished. But John makes a point and he says that this light, Jesus Christ, is such a powerful light that it is never extinguished. It was there at the beginning and it will be there forever. Talking about movies, one of the movies that's really, really popular since the 80s at Christmas time is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And I'm sure a lot of you have watched that movie. For a lot of people, it's maybe their favorite. It's a little bit of a crude movie, but there's a lot of hilariousness to it. And one of the parts of the movie is Clark Griswold, who's the main character of the story. He has this idea that he's going to light up his house, and he's going to put every single outdoor light that he can imagine, he's going to staple it to his house. And so he hauls out all these lights. Now, these aren't LED lights that we have, you know, in the 21st century. This was filmed in 1989, so it's all incandescent lights. And he takes out all these strings of lights, and he's got his ladder, and he's got his stapler, and he's putting strings of lights all over the house. In fact, the house is completely covered in these white incandescent lights, all the way from the roof. I mean, he's stapling it onto the roof all the way to the bottom. And he gets to the very end, and he has all these extension cords coming up, and he's finally going to plug it in, and he plugs it in, and there's nothing. There's no light. There's nothing. And he's frustrated with that. And there's this story that you see in the movie of him trying to figure out what it is. When he finally does figure it out between him and his wife, and they plug it in and the house lights up, it's so bright that the neighbors are blinded by it and there's accidents happening nearby. And it's so bright that in the city of Chicago, where this story is set, half the city is browned out because he's receiving so much electricity to light up his house. When I watch this story, I think it reminds me that for every single one of us, whether we realize it or not, we're all trying to plug into some sort of power source. Clark was trying to plug into a power source. He was having a hard time figuring it out. And every single one of us were a little bit like Clark. We're trying to figure out where our power is coming from. We're trying to figure out where our light is going to come from. And we're trying to plug into all sorts of different sources. But in reality, no matter what you're plugging into, it's not giving you the light that you need. You can, in fact, you can be a Christian and believe in Jesus, and you're still plugging into the wrong power sources. You're still trying to get your life or your light from the wrong places. There's no power there. There's no light there. You're just getting a trickle of electricity. Sometimes our power sources in reality, the things that we're trying to get life from, sometimes those power sources are very me-based. It's something that's going to give me a sense of happiness, maybe a little bit of fulfillment, maybe a little bit of joy, but it's very, very me-based. It's very selfish in how I receive that light or that life, and it affects people negatively. If you zoom out and watch this story of Clark Griswold and putting lights up all over his house, he's trying to create this Christmas spirit for his family, but in reality, it's very, very selfish. He doesn't care how it affects the neighbors, the fact that it's going to blind them to death. He doesn't care about whether or not he browns out the rest of the city with his crazy light display, as long as he gets his. As long as he's happy, as long as his family's happy, he's not really concerned about anybody else. It seems like he has a Christmas spirit, but in reality, it was very me-centered. And at Christmas time, this can represent our lives, if we're truly honest. We're all trying to get our Christmas. We're all trying to get what we want to make it happy for ourselves. We don't care whether or not it browns out the rest of the city, whether it blinds our neighbors or whatever that may be, as long as we get ours. It's very different from the light of the world that John describes. This light of the world that John describes in his gospel isn't me-centered, but it's so outward-centered. And the life of Jesus was so outward-centered. It wasn't something that you received for yourself and no one else can get, but it was something that it cannot be extinguished. You receive the light and you pass on the light, and that light is for everybody, not just for yourself. It affects other people in a very positive way. When I think about Gateway's Christmas giving project, we're doing a giving project for the mustard seed, and we're doing a giving project for people in Yemen, people that we're never going to come in contact with. But it's people that we can shed a little bit of light of the love of Jesus in their lives. It's not about making our Christmas better, but it's about sharing the light of Jesus with others. This idea of light actually didn't come from John. John got it from Jesus. When we read this in John chapter 8, verse 12, he's quoting words of Jesus. And it says this, it says, I am the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life. You will have the light that leads to life. Jesus pointed at himself and he's like, I'm the light of the world. If Jesus is not the light of the world, that sounds pretty arrogant. But he points to himself and he's like, if you draw closer to me, you draw closer to the light, you won't have to walk in darkness. If you walk closer to the light, you can step out of the shadows. You can step out of the darkness that you are experiencing. And even in the midst of what we look at in the world today, it seems kind of dark. If we step closer to the light of Jesus, I believe that it pushes out the darkness. We all recognize that light leads to life. We all recognize that. We're in the darkest times of the year right now. I mentioned my family before. It feels like it's getting dark at like 3:30 in the afternoon. And it's at this time of year, at Christmas, that we do our best and we string up all sorts of lights all over our houses. Why do we do that? What is it about light on our Christmas trees, on our houses, that we're just so attracted to? You can hop in your car and maybe you can find out through the newspaper or on the internet where different people have really cool light displays, and we just want to drive around and see the light in the darkness. And there's something about that that just brings life to us. In fact, in the wintertime, it's here in Kamloops, it's brown outside, but oftentimes at this time of year, it's white, and the snow comes down. As much as we hate shoveling it out of our driveways, there's something special about the brightness that snow brings. During the daytime, the light from the sun shines off of the snow, and it just makes everything look brighter. At night, when our Christmas lights come on, it kind of reflects off of the snow, and it looks brighter and looks more beautiful, and it brings life. When we think about the light, we all look forward to summer. We all look forward to June and July and August, where the sun is closest to the earth, at least for us in the northern hemisphere. And the days are longer. The sun rises incredibly early, and the sun sets, and we can be outside in our shorts and our t-shirts till like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and it's warm. And it just brings life to us, doesn't it? We get that vitamin D, and things don't seem so dark. Even in the midst of COVID, this summer didn't seem so dark. We know that light brings life. In fact, as government officials look forward to the summer, they're expecting that COVID will slowly die off just purely due to the light and the heat that the sun brings. And it's Jesus who compares himself to that and says, "I am that light." During the Roman Empire, December 25th was winter solstice. So they used a different calendar at the time of Jesus and during the Roman Empire. Today we use the Gregorian calendar. So winter solstice is actually on December 21st or 22nd. But originally it was on the 25th. And winter solstice is a time when the darkest days have come, where we receive the least amount of light. And after winter solstice, the light starts breaking in. Each day, each successive day just gets a little bit brighter and a little bit brighter. And this was on December 25th, which is interesting. When we look at Jesus' birth, we actually have no idea when he was born. There's been all sorts of guesses, but in the reality, it's just a bunch of theories. We don't know when he was born. So it's a bit of a guess. So the question has been, why December 25th? Why December 20? Why is it that we choose December 25th for his birthday? And there's been all sorts of theories. One of the theories that's out there is the fact that on December 25th, it was the winter solstice. And that was when, typically within the Roman Empire, they had their pagan celebrations. It was celebrating the winter solstice, and it was a big festival, and it was a big celebration. And when the church took over and Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire during Constantine's rule, they're like, that must have been when they, you know, they decided, let's push out this pagan holiday and let's instead celebrate the birth of Jesus instead. That's one theory. We don't really know if that's true. There's some other thoughts as to why we celebrate on December 25th. Some people have looked back in history, and when they look at the early Christian church, some Christians believed in the early church that when they look at Jesus' death, we can more accurately look at when Jesus were to die based upon when the Passover would have been celebrated within the first century. And they figure it's about potentially March 25th. And the early church believed that Jesus' conception in Mary's womb happened on the same day that Jesus died. So Jesus, if Jesus would have died on March 25th, they look back in time and there is just this belief that Jesus was conceived as well on March 25th, 30 some years earlier. And so when they look forward 9 months from March 25th, you hit December 25th. And that's why we celebrate Christmas on December 25th. That's one theory. There's another one out there which is really, really interesting, and I think it connects with this idea of winter solstice, is why would we choose December 25th? Well, winter solstice is when the light is breaking in. It just gets a little bit lighter every single day. Doesn't it make sense that when the light of the world decided to show up, that the light broke into the darkness? And from then on, the world just gets a little bit brighter. The world just gets a little bit brighter. So whichever theory you want to look at, I think December 25th is a good day. I think as we look at the darkness of Christmas or the darkness of winter, we look forward to the light. We look forward to the light coming, which is the birth of Jesus. This December 21st, which is actually tomorrow, there's going to be a special Christmas star that shows up in the sky. Saturn and Jupiter are actually going to kind of merge. They're two. When you look up in the sky, Saturn and Jupiter look like stars, and tomorrow night, December 21st, they're going to merge. In fact, they're going to be 0.1 degrees away from each other in terms of them moving in front of one another. And it's going to create a really, really bright star in the sky. This actually hasn't happened for 800 years. It's going to be special tomorrow night. Reminds me of the first magi or the wise men. It says in the Bible that they were following a bright star in the sky, looking for who is one born king of the Jews. How fitting it is that these magi were following a bright star to find the light of the world. So what is the darkness? Jesus, the light of the world, comes in to push out the darkness. What is that darkness? I think it can be represented in our world today by pandemics, by wars, by famines, by economic hardship that you're experiencing. This darkness is hopelessness. It's despair. It's depression. This darkness is hurt, it's pain, and it's death. This darkness is so many things, and it represents so many things that we struggle with. And Jesus is the light of the world that comes in to push that out. In fact, eventually Jesus promises a time that is coming where the darkness will be completely erased. In Psalm 18, verse 28 in the Old Testament, the psalmist says this: "You light a lamp for me. The Lord my God lights up my darkness." I like that. The Lord my God lights up my darkness. Isn't that what Jesus does? When we invite him in, he lights up our darkness. In the Old Testament, they went through a lot of different times of darkness, and they looked towards God to be their light. And they believed that he was closer to them than the air that they breathe. And he is. Darkness can be described in so many ways, but no matter what darkness we experience, the light is always there. Jesus is always there. Matthew quotes Isaiah chapter 9 when he talks about how Jesus is beginning his ministry, and he looks at Isaiah chapter 9 as a prophecy referring to Jesus. It says this in verse 2, it says, The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. Without Jesus, we live and we walk in darkness. But a light is coming. They were looking forward to that light. And Jesus is the one that brings light to the darkness. He calls us out of darkness into his light. You may or may not be a Christian. It doesn't matter what label you put on yourselves. But when we choose to walk down our own path in our own way, in reality, we end up walking in darkness. We end up in dark places and in our own darkness. Being able to walk in the light is recognizing and discovering the light of the world in Jesus Christ. Inviting that light in, and choosing to walk closer to that light. If we're all honest, doesn't matter who you are. Our tendency as human beings, no matter how religious you may feel you are, our tendency is to walk away from the darkness. To walk away from the light, I should say. We all do that. We struggle with it. I struggle with it. I tend to go down my own path, and I tend to end up in darkness. And most of the times, it's Jesus who's coming to me, who's drawing me. He's saying, come back to the light. Stop wandering around in the darkness. And I think for so many people, no matter where you're at today, this year has been a wandering around in the darkness. And it's been a year of frustration for you. And I think that Jesus is calling you back. And he says, don't just celebrate this Christmas trying to fill your life with all sorts of power sources that aren't going to bring any life to you. But draw closer to what gives you life. That's the light of men. That's Jesus Christ. There was one that came before Jesus that John talks about. And this person who came before Jesus came, and he came to talk about the light. In John chapter 1, verse 6 to 9, it says this: God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. Can you imagine what it would have been like to be John the Baptist? He knew what his calling was. He knew that the light was coming into the world. In fact, by the time Jesus was an adult, he was able to point to Jesus and says, here's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Here's the light of the world. And he pointed everybody to it, but it was such a step of faith for John. He didn't know exactly what the light was going to look like. He didn't know exactly if Jesus... He stepped out in faith, believing it was Jesus, but I think there was aspects in his mind that he had doubt of whether or not it was. But he pointed towards Jesus, and he talked about Jesus, and he talked about the light that was to come. For us in the 21st century who have all the gifts in the world to be able to read through the Gospels, we have the ability to be able to see the things that John never saw. John was able to point towards the light, but he was killed before he ever was able to witness exactly what that light looked like. But he pointed towards the light nonetheless. I believe that if you are a part of the Church of Jesus Christ, that every single one of us has the same calling as John. In a slightly different way. We know who the light is. We know what the light is. We know how Jesus lived out his life. And just like John, we're called to point to the light. We're called to point to the light. John never had to point to himself, but he continued to point to the light. John wasn't perfect. You and I are not perfect. But we point to the light and we invite the light into our lives. We don't just believe in the light. Believing in the light isn't good enough, but we invite the light in to transform our hearts. And as the light transforms our lives, we're able to continue to point to the light and point others to the light. At Christmas time, we, as I said earlier, we watch all sorts of Christmas movies. One of the things that typically characterizes most Christmas movies is that you know it's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of lights. There's, you know, they're going to have a lot of Christmas decorations, and there's going to be some sort of problem. There's going to be some sort of problem. But we know when we watch Christmas movies that there is a solution at the end, and it's all going to be okay. In fact, if you're a fan of Hallmark Christmas movies, you can pretty much guarantee exactly what's going to happen all the way along, and you know that you're going to get your happy ending. Unfortunately, I think that at times we look at the Christmas story like it's a Hallmark movie. It almost seems too good to be true. When we watch those Hallmark Christmas movies, they make us feel good inside, but we know there's no truth to it. It's just something to pass the time and give us some warm and fuzzies. And sometimes we look at the Christmas story and there's been people that says there's no difference. There's no truth to it. It's just something that gives us warm and fuzzies at Christmas time. Is it too good to be true? I remember telling somebody years ago the story of Christmas, of Jesus' birth for the very first time, and this person listened to me recount it, and they looked at me and they said, "That's a fantastic story, but that's hard to believe. That's a fantastic story, but it's hard to believe." If that is true, it changes everything. Is it just a fantastic story? Or is there truth to it? Was what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what they were talking about, was it true? Was it true? If you're listening today and you're a little bit unsure, I would encourage you to look a little bit more into it. It's easy to dismiss as maybe just a fun, heartwarming movie. But I believe that Jesus was so much more than that. There's a lot of truth to this story, and it is a story that has brought life and light and change to millions of people around the world. When I think of Christmas, yeah, we have Santa. And we have decorations and we have gifts and everything, but it all rings a little bit hollow without Jesus. Jesus is the one that brings light to our lives. And I pray that for you this Christmas as well. May Christmas be more than just a celebration and a holiday, but may it be a celebration of light. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for Christmas. I thank you for your disciples who recorded these events down for us to read, even thousands of years later. Recording the light that came into the world. God, I pray that you would reveal yourself to us this Christmas. Lord, for those who are out there who are listening today who have a hard time believing in this, I pray that a curiosity would be stirred up within their lives and they would look into it a little bit more. I pray, dear God, that that there would be those that would invite that light in, that they would, that we would invite the light of the world into our darkness, into our darkness. And Jesus, that light would take over and it would transform our lives. Jesus, may we not forget the light in this Christmas. We invite you in. Lord, I pray that you would transform us from the inside out. You'd fill us with your joy. You'd fill us with your hope for the future. And you'd fill us with you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Look forward to see you on Christmas Eve. Have an awesome Christmas and a happy new year.